Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Professor Alok Kumar about his recent book, Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures. And today, we're going to continue that conversation. But before we bring Alok Kumar on, a little bit about his background. He had his educational training in India and upon graduation became a scientist at the Indian Institute of Technology in Mumbai. He later taught in Germany, then came to the United States where he was a lecturer at California State University and finally landed a longstanding position at the State University of New York at their Oswego campus. He is a physics professor, a distinguished teaching professor, actually. And so we welcome to Common Threads once again, Professor Alok Kumar. Hello, Alok.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me back. I'm truly honored.
Certainly. So one of the things when we talk about science and religion here in the West, you often encounter a tension in the Christian community. People who self-identify as Christians, and they are concerned about things like evolution and the age of the world. You know, some believe it's less than 10,000 years. And so there's a lot of conversation and, as I say, a lot of tension and sometimes a lot of anger. Now, in Hinduism, from what I see, things like the age of the earth don't come into question because the Hindu scriptures acknowledge that the universe is billions of years old, so there's not an issue there. But every once in a while, something comes up that I do notice. So, for instance, the two great Hindu epics, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, there are some issues there that where people argue back and forth about the historicity of those two. I've read articles in Indian newspapers about what is called Ram Setu, or a supposed bridge between Sri Lanka and southern India. And then a few years ago, the current Prime Minister Modi gained a lot of headlines because he claimed that Ganesh's head, or the replacement of Ganesh's head with a human head with an elephant's head, was an example of ancient surgery. So I wonder if you could address those issues and tell me what you think is the appropriate way that we should view all of this.
Oh, I would love to. But my answer is going to be long, so be patient with me. First, you know, science evolves out of human necessities. And among the Hindus, science could grow with religion. In fact, one could achieve moksha by excelling in astronomy, mathematics, physics, music, and all different kinds of fine arts. So all these disciplines of knowledge were bound to excel in that culture, and that's what happened. So, for example, when Aryabhatta wrote his book, Aryabhatiya, where he explained motion of the earth around the sun, he said, if you learn this knowledge, you can achieve moksha. Same thing, in Vaisheshika Sutra, when Kannada wrote his book, he said that if you can learn this knowledge, you will achieve moksha. So science was an avenue to achieve moksha. So it was bound to, prosper. Now, second thing, you mentioned that there is a controversy, in the West about, between science and religion. That's not really true. Yes, there was a controversy at the time of Galileo, but a large number of scientists, whether it's Newton or Kepler or Einstein, these were highly religious people. I can give you one quotation from Einstein, which he published in the New York Times in 1930, that in this materialistic age of ours, the serious scientific workers are the only profoundly religious people. That's what Einstein said. So there was not much of, I mean, it's very clearly he is admitting that, that there is no controversy between science and religion. And the reason is, how do you know about God? The only way to know about God is to know about God's creation. So you learn about the creation, and that's how you learn about God. And to science is a very powerful way to learn about the creation. So that way, science and religion, there is no controversy. They can go hand in hand, you know. Now, talking about these Ram Setu that you mentioned, through remote sensing, now the existence of that bridge can be established, and there is no problem. And about Mahabharata that you mentioned, the reason there is a little controversy about its date, because Earth is labeled as, or Earth is defined as a our universe is about several billion years old in Hindu scriptures. And when we see the map of the sky, map of different constellations that are provided, in Mahabharata, and you back calculate, because if, for example, if there are two poles, one is the North Pole and the another is South Pole, that happens only at certain time. Like today, we have only North Pole. There is no South Pole, South Star, sorry. I should not say North Pole. North Star. So that happened only at certain time, in our history. And when you back calculate it, then the age of Mahabharata comes out to be a lot larger. What happened was, all these dates were defined, the dates that we accept today were defined in Europe. And most of these Europeans, they believe that Earth was created in 4004 BC. So if something is created so recently, then how can it be older than that, And as a result of that, the dates that we have defined, they will be modified. There is no doubt in my mind that one of these days, most of these dates will be revised. Prime Minister Modi's, claim of plastic surgery. Now, let me share, whatever he said is not a scientific knowledge, but it doesn't mean that it's not a knowledge. It means, 100 years ago, we did not know about the aeroplanes. Only in the last 100 years or so, we have developed aeroplanes. However, in Ramayana or, Mahabharata and in many other scriptures, they have defined aeroplanes. And Hindus, they believed in it. So not everything that we know has to be, validated by science. Like plastic surgery. The Western people did not know about plastic surgery 150 years ago, but it did not know. It does not mean that that the Hindus did not know about it. So the plastic surgery is at least about 2,000 years old. Shushruta, talked about plastic surgery so long ago. So I think we should not be so critical of him believing in those ancient scriptures.
One thing we should probably do, you mentioned a few times in your answer, you referred to the term moksha. I'd like you to define that for us, first of all. So why don't you explain, what is it that these disciplines can lead a person to?
Yeah, see, Hindus believe in reincarnation or the transmigration of soul. So we, just like we change clothes, the soul changes body. It goes from one body to another. That's the Hindu belief. And the purpose of life is to go beyond these transmigration of soul and be one with the God. You become the God. And that stage of liberation, we call it moksha, which is the ultimate goal for all Hindus. And Hindus, they go through, all their actions are governed by this goal. And there are four different, avenues to achieve that, like Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raj Yoga, and Hatha Yoga. So these are the avenues they define that will reach to the ultimate goal of moksha, means liberation, where you merge, you become the divine being.
And another thing I just wanted to mention while you were speaking, you were mentioning some of the scientists who were Christian. You also included Einstein, of course, who was Jewish, but nonetheless, I believe my point was it's often lay people against scientists and not within the scientific community, more often than not. You understand what I'm saying? So it's perhaps people in the clergy and the people in the churches who oppose science that might contradict the literal interpretation of the Bible. I believe Christian scientists pretty much are on the same page with everybody else. That's what I assume. Would you agree with that?
Personal feeling is, any time people become selfish, they divide people. That's what happens, rather than unite them. That's what happened during colonization. And that's what happens when certain people, they try to become the gatekeeper of certain, entity. And so they divide. And I think it's because of the action of those people, science and religion have been separated, which I feel is hurting, humanity. Because a large number of scientists, cannot understand some of the religious doctrines and vice versa. And so it is basically fragmenting our society, which is, I think, is hurting society. And so on the name of religion, and there also, when I'm saying religion, there are so many of these. There are Muslims, and there are Christians, and there are Jews, and so on. And they are basically fragmenting humanity. It would be nice if you can believe in, certain human values and unite all these disciplines and avoid these fragmentation.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Alok Kumar, and we're talking about his book, Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures. One of the subjects you cover in your book to a great extent, really, is the science of Ayurveda. And Ayurveda has become very popular in certain circles here in the West. I think in probably every major city in the United States, the major cities, you will definitely be able to find someone who practices Ayurveda, who has been trained in this ancient science. What's interesting to me is it seems like in India, and correct me if I'm wrong, in India, you either go one way or the other. You either, if you want to study the healing arts, you either attend a school that teaches you allopathic, more traditional Western medicine, or you go to an institution that will teach you Ayurveda. And you're not going to complement one with the other. Is that by and large true?
By the way, I grew up in a town, as I mentioned in the previous segment, Haridwar. It's a center for Ayurveda. So there are many Ayurvedic universities there. And Ayurveda is basically the Hindu science of healing and rejuvenation, which is curative as well as preventive. And the most important thing in Ayurveda is it focuses on body and mind. So the role of mind in the welfare of body, something we have beginning to believe, you know, now, even in modern science, that the healing of the mind is a very, is a reality. So your thought process is equally important as, you know, you exercise or you eat. Thinking positive is also, it is a necessity. Now, talking about, you know, the training in India, it is true that we have two different systems. However, Indians, by and large, they go to both systems. You know, they adopt both systems because poor people, they generally go for Ayurveda because the medicine is very inexpensive there. People who have money, they go to the Western system. It's not a rule, but this is how it is, you know. So both systems are, you know, coexisting in India, and, you know, both are quite successful there. And, you know, there is a serious growth of Ayurveda in India, especially in the last 10, 15 years, especially after the, you know, after Modi's government, they are investing. And in the West, it is, of course, becoming quite popular because the West is finally realizing the role of mind in the welfare of body.
You know what surprised me in the book is you discuss leeches, and all of my life, I've understood the leech to be a symbol of quackery or a symbol of unscientific medicine. There are all sorts of jokes about doctors who use leeches. But apparently, they can be used in a therapeutic way. Tell us about that.
That is true. By the way, in 2004, and I'm just using my memory, I could be wrong in that, but only in the year, but the information is correct. Around 2004, I think the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, cleared the use of leeches in as a medical device. So it is commonly practiced in the West, in America, today, you know, especially any time we are going for skin grafting to make sure that there is a blood circulation, we allow leeches to suck the blood so that blood can flow. And so in the saliva of leeches, there is a anti-clotting agent, And therefore, it is very, very helpful. So today, it's a big business idea because you don't have to cut, you don't have to perform surgery to cure. And leeches, are commonly used in the West, in Germany, and in America. So it is not a, voodoo science. It's a reality which is becoming quite popular. In fact, I went to India. I just, made a short documentary film on Ayurveda, and I saw the, how leeches were used in sucking the pus or sucking blood or, basically, curing tumor in India. And so it is commonly used now in the West as well as in India.
Well, I'm going to have to find out if my insurance covers that. That's nice to know. Now,
yes, it's a reality. These days. And by the way, the best part is it is very inexpensive. I think you can buy a leech, in just a few bucks, and use that for curative purposes.
Okay, that's nice to know. You stress the importance of hygiene and health, and of course, we know how important that is today. But what that led me to remember was that Hindus have a long tradition of daily bathing, whereas Europeans would go months without bathing a couple of centuries ago. I don't know when that tradition stopped, but I'd be curious to know the health effects of going without bathing for months on end were for the Europeans. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, by the way, I was talking that science evolves out of human necessity, and this is a prime example. So Europeans, they had to invent, high-quality colognes and perfumes. The reason that industry flourished so much is because they did not, use proper hygiene. They were not taking bath every day. While in India, that is a very important thing. The dinacharya means how do you start your day and how do you conduct yourself all day long. That is an important part of their medical training. These are the two contrasts of, two different cultures. In India, you get up in the morning and, taking a shower or taking bath is, considered to be a very important function before you go for meditation and yoga.
Right, exactly. We only have a few minutes left, so if you could be brief on this question. We are taught that the natural world was first deduced by philosophers. That is to say, when you look back in the West, and of course that means you're talking about the Greeks, that the natural world was first deduced by philosophers, and that model was supplanted by the scientific method. Would you say that the ancient Hindus were able to understand the world intuitively better than the Greeks? And that because obviously a lot of what the Greeks originally thought was proved wrong by the scientific method. But from what I read in your book and the conversation I'm having with you now, it seems like that the intuitive understanding of the ancient Hindus works well with what is later discovered by the scientific method.
Let me share two things, by the way. First, and I will be very brief because I know we are running out of time. First, there is no such thing as the scientific method in physical sciences. by the it doesn't exist. The scientific method where observation first and then hypothesis and then theory and then prediction, that method is commonly used in social sciences but not in physical sciences. So most of the discoveries in physics happened where scientific method was not used at all. That's one thing, you know. And by the way, I have written research papers about that with the historical examples. The second thing is most of the innovations in science happen because of the intuitive ideas. So intuition plays a very important role in the growth of science. In fact, Hideki Yukawa, who is a Nobel laureate in physics, has written a whole book about it, Creativity and Intuition. And, you know, he has written in that book that if there is another, major renaissance of science, it is going to happen through intuition. So intuition is a very important role to play in scientific growth, and it should not be discarded, and Hindus were very good at that.
That's remarkable to hear. I appreciate that. Well, Professor, we are out of time for this edition of Common Threads, but I want to thank you for your appearance today and last week as well.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and it's such a pleasure. I'm so honored to share my views with your listeners.
You've been listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and today we've been talking about the book Ancient Hindu Science, Its Transmission and Impact on World Cultures, with its author, Professor Alok Kumar. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.